Hi, everybody. This is Tyus. You are listening to the Battleborn Libertarian Podcast. Today is May 15th. It is episode number 3, and today we're going to be talking all about Syria.
You are listening to the Battleborn Libertarian Podcast, the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Here's your host, Tyus France.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the Battleborn Libertarian Podcast. We are the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. So if you are within the state, we really appreciate you being here and listening. If you're not a libertarian yet, that's great. Thank you for tuning in and getting a different perspective. And if you are a libertarian, well, then this is the place to listen to us, to hear what's going on locally, nationally, internationally, and what's happening with the party, and specifically how you can get involved. Sitting across from me is my co-host, Alex.
Hey, everyone.
Thanks for being here.
Hey, love to be here.
Did you make it to the Out for Liberty event?
I did.
I'm so sorry that I didn't get to go to that. The world got ahead of me. Tell me how the event went.
It went well. We had a number of our walkers there, and we were able to do shirt sizes, talk about when we're going to meet, and we're looking forward to that next week.
Next week? Oh, yeah. So tell me what's going on next week.
Yeah. So next week on the 22nd, we have a volunteer day of action, and then on the 23rd, just the very next day on Sunday, we actually have a AIDS walk that we participate in. Put on by a group called AFAN, Aid for AIDS Nevada, and Out for Liberty, which is an LGBTQ caucus for the Libertarian Party of Nevada. They're actually a team. So if you want to, you can sign up for our team and come out and walk with us.
That'd be awesome. Did AFAN do the Black and White Party here in town as well?
I believe so, yeah. That's in the fall, I think.
It's good times.
Yeah.
Have you been to it?
I haven't. I'm unfortunately, had work conflicts that prevented me from going. But our chairman, Brandon Ellison, went to the Black and White
Party. All right. This year, I'll set you up to tickets. We're going. It's a good time.
All right. I'll look forward to it.
Cool. So, yeah, we've got the day of action coming up. I was on the website. I didn't see exactly what we're doing, but I'm going to be there regardless. It's going to be a blast. If you want to go to that website, figure out what we're talking about, go to lpnevada.org. Okay, so today we're going to talk about, I don't really have any local news to go over, but we have some big picture news that's taken place, and I figured, why don't we touch upon that while it's hot topic stuff. First, let's talk about some national news. United Airlines. So, if you haven't been on the internet in about a week, and you've been living under a rock for some reason, then you might have missed that United Airlines had an incident where they apparently booked a flight completely full. A lot of people thought it was overbooked, but apparently it wasn't completely overbooked. It was just booked solid. Then they tried to get four of their employees. They needed to move four of their employees to a different spot, so they asked four people to leave the plane. Nobody wanted to do it. They incentivized them a little bit. I think it was like $150. Or something like that, and nobody wanted to do it. They then held a kind of a raffle, the opposite of a good raffle, where if you win, you actually lose and you get kicked off the flight. So three people who got pulled actually left the flight. The fourth person just didn't want to, so he stayed on that flight. And what ended up happening is they ended up getting a airport police officer to board the flight, ask him to leave. That didn't work. Then they forcibly removed him from the flight. He hit his head. He ended up bleeding. It was caught on lots of people's cameras, which I wonder if this was not caught, if it would have even made the news, if anybody would have even noticed this situation take place. And anyways, he was removed from the flight, and it made lots of news. A lot of people have said, well, is this legal? Is this illegal? Can somebody do this? What is your opinion on the situation? Unless you, I can cover mine first if you want to gather your thoughts.
I like a lot of internet things. It seems like we didn't get the whole story until later in the week, but I'd love to hear your thoughts first for sure.
Sure. So I went back and forth with some different people online about this, because one of the things that I pointed out was that United Airlines was getting a lot of attention, obviously negative attention based off of this. And one party that was involved that got almost no attention was a police officer that used force against somebody who was acting peacefully. Now, the real question comes into play when you're talking about the use of force is, was the person that was refusing to leave the plane, was he aggressing against the airline by not evacuating their premises when asked to? And that comes down to like the legal question of, well, he bought a ticket, they let him board, and that within the contract, he's definitely allowed to, they're definitely allowed to cancel it up until the point of boarding. So there was all this, there was all these legal things, and it was definitely a one-off situation where it was super, super rare. I think the things that are noteworthy is excessive force was definitely used in this situation, and it was used by a police officer, which we've seen too many times. Fortunately, now everybody's got cameras on them all the time, but you know, it's not back in like Rodney King where it was like one guy with a tape recorder that happened to have a battery still working in it and he caught the shot. Nowadays, it's shot from every angle, so we get to see that stuff and it gets put out there. I think more attention should be put on that police officer for their use of force. The police officer was suspended pending more information. The other part of this that I think is interesting, especially from a libertarian standpoint, is that United Airlines lost $950 million in market cap. And a lot of times people see things, they go, you know, that's an injustice, and we need to write a law to correct that injustice from taking place. And those laws take a long time, and they often limit people's freedoms and have unexpected consequences. And yet, if you leave those things open to the free market, when an injustice like this happens, this company was punished significantly more than I think a law could have punished them. They lost almost $1 billion in revenue, and they didn't. That money wasn't fined by them. That money wasn't taken from them with force. It wasn't given to the government or anything like that. It was taken by people that said, you know what, I'm not invested in you anymore. So the way they could have handled this from a free market standpoint is they simply could have said, like, hey, nobody wants $150? How about $2,000? How about $5,000? I mean, if it cost almost $1 billion, they could have given the guy $1 million to get off this plane and not have lost, I mean, and have been in a better situation. So that's kind of my standpoint. I think I look at this and I say, this is a great example of how the free market ends up creating the incentives for companies to do the right or wrong thing. And if we look to the government to create those incentives and constantly empower them to become bigger and more powerful, well, we end up actually slowing down and we create shelters for these corporations. While if the free market does it, the company gets punished very, very, very quickly. In fact, many people think that these companies have all the power, but the truth is, the consumer has all the power in these situations. The only way the company ends up with more power than the consumer is when a law is put in place that prevents the consumer from being able to act against the company. The consumer is the person that sets the price. The consumer is the person that really justifies where they fly to based off of demand. All of those things are in the consumer's power. And so I think it's important to use this as an example of how the free market can empower people and show that it is a more powerful force for good than laws and regulations and essentially a growing government that might be unnecessary.
I think that's great. That's a great takeaway. Yeah.
Long tangent.
Certainly, I think I went on a slightly different one where one of the issues they ran into when they kept raising how much money they would give is there's actually a regulation that prevents them from going over a certain amount of money to offer.
I saw that. So I read it because I saw that in two different places. From what I understood, it said something to the effect of they have to pay $400 more than the price of the ticket or $1,350, something like that, whichever is lower. But it was saying that is what they have to pay. They're not restricted from paying more. So I saw it published in a few different places that it said that.
And that was for involuntary. So that was what was crazy is there's actually a limit to how much money they can offer someone voluntarily to get off of a flight, which is why – now, they didn't hit that limit, and they really ought to have gone right up to it before they decided to go for involuntary. But it might have been that it was actually cheaper to do the involuntary, give them $400 plus the cost of the flight was probably less than the voluntary amount.
Interesting.
So, And that's all been very well covered online, so I don't want to go into that particularly. But I want to note that it was the government that, again, interfered in what a private company could offer. The other thing is that that flight was not operated by United Airlines. A lot of people don't know how the airlines actually work.
I didn't know this.
And it was, even though most flights that you get on are not operated by the mainline carrier. They're the one that, you know, Southwest. Well, Southwest is a little different, but United, Delta, right, all of these, they're actually operated large in part by these holding companies that own the routes and the ports and the planes that go in between various destinations. So when you hear that so-and-so is adding a new flight, what they've really done is they've negotiated with a company that offers that flight already, a holding company, and they've provided it. And in this case, the holding company is a one called Republic Airways. And so if you, next time you fly, you'll notice at the very beginning of the flight attendant, when they're doing their safety spiel, will say, thank you for boarding United, you know, 1234, operated today by, you know, Republic Airways, SkyWest, et cetera. You will hear the name of the company actually flying that plane, actually providing that flight.
Huh.
So your Republic actually services Delta, United. I mean, it was just luck of the draw, honestly, that it went with that it was a United mainline carrier.
Is United more responsible then, or is the is this Republic company more?
They're the ones that actually called for the police officers. So,
oh, poor United! They're getting a terrible rap.
Yes. So United was not. They're the mainline carrier, and it's their responsibility in that they've got a contract with Republic to provide that leg of the flight for people. And this is another reason why there's a lot of this boarding different planes, and you have to lay over in Atlanta where you're switching from maybe Republic Airways Holdings to mainline United or mainline Delta, or, you know, that's a lot of what's happening when you and go from these regionals to hubs to mainline carriers. Is you might be flying all underneath the Delta banner or the American Airlines banner, but inside there's actually contracts with all these different companies, and they all do training a little differently, and they all, yeah. So, I mean, I know I'm friends with several flight attendants that have flown for some holding companies, and they'll work a United flight, then a Delta flight, then a American flight. I mean, it's depending upon what contracts that holding company has with various mainline carriers.
So they just might throw on a different name badge. Wow. Absolutely. I had no idea about that. That's really interesting.
So the whole time, I mean, and that's why a lot of these flight attendants always look so generic. There's not like a certain, you know, view. Anyway, so yes, so poor United, yes. But on the other hand, I think that the $950 million they lost, which I believe they regained up to a loss of $300 million, was from shareholders seeing that United did not handle the PR on this very well, particularly with their CEO's quick reaction. It's great to have a quick reaction, but it's not great when you're listening to your lawyers and not to your PR people. It would have been better for them to put out no statement than to put out a statement that further angered, you know, everyone. Well,
can you summarize kind of his initial statement and then where it went to?
Yeah, his initial statement was basically, we reserve the right to kick anybody off our flight because legally, and that's true, I mean, legally, you buy a ticket and it's not like a movie ticket. So in the state of Nevada, for example, you buy a movie ticket, you're considered an owner of that seat that you're sitting in for the duration of the movie. That's your private property in that little two-hour window.
You're renting it.
You're renting it, yeah. And so every state handled this a little differently, but with the airlines, you know, again, people say they're hiding behind federal regulations. Well, yeah, but I mean, that's what they have to follow. We've decided that they're going to have to follow all of these federal regulations. And in this case, there is a provision that allows them to remove passengers from a seat, because when you buy a ticket, you don't buy a ticket for a seat, you buy a ticket for passage. And they, you know, will overbook it, etc. And what actually happened here, there wasn't an overbooking problem. There was a, they needed to move some pilots, I believe, to another hub on that flight so that they would make another flight. So whenever this happens, and they're called non-rev passengers because they don't generate revenue, but potentially the company could have lost, you know, hundreds of thousands in delays and other things that might have happened. So when they're trying to get people off of a flight to board for these other these pilots and such, they're trying to get them from where that pilot lives or where they're flying out of to where they're actually flying a plane. And so some people then said, well, why didn't they just buy them a bus ticket or rent them a car? And that comes down to union contracts.
Really?
So the flight attendants. Yes, this was a very complicated issue, which is why I have not said anything online about it other than some memes, which I thought were funny, but they were memes. They're not really a judicious opinion. Union contracts often between very, very powerful flight, as you might imagine, flight attendant and pilots unions, there are often clauses that say that you must fly us from here to here, and that's the contract. They're not allowed. So it could have been that they were looking at an $100,000 breach of contract fine from a union standpoint. So yeah, would it have been cheaper and faster in some ways to have driven those people on a rent-a-car, you know, down from, I don't even remember, it was about a four-hour distance, I believe. And yeah, it might have been cheaper from that standpoint, but they're forgetting that these unions have got contracts that say you will non-rev this person. And even higher ranked than moving pilots around and keeping flights on time is that flight attendants and pilots have a coded emergency that they can use. Now, they're limited in how often they can use this and when they can use it, but say you're a flight attendant and your mother's, you know, been in an accident and you need to get home to see her, they can code emergency and they will be put on a flight. They will bump a ticketed passenger off of a flight to get that person home.
Hmm.
That's how steep the penalties are, you know, for breaking that on a union level.
So there's union involved in there. There's regulations involved in there with the FCC. I mean, it's so complicated.
So to just look at it and go, well, they should have offered more money. That's kind of missing the point that yes, they actually could have offered that person more money by forcibly removing them than voluntarily because of that regulation that has a cap. Which, why is there a cap on voluntary? You'd think that the airline would be up to their discretion to decide how much money they can offer somebody.
They should have the freedom to do business they want to do.
Exactly. So I'm not defending United whatsoever because ultimately they had the contract with Republic. Republic, they definitely get most of the blame in my mind because they're the ones that not only, you know, didn't handle this a different way, which would have been looking for volunteers again, offer the maximal amount. Instead, they call the police and ask them to get a person off the flight. And then the police, in my mind, the guiltiest, right? You know, maybe tied with Republic for calling them in the first place. But I mean, aren't we supposed to have training? I mean, aren't the police? And what I want to take away from this, Tyus, more than anything is I'm a little bit incensed at how outraged people were about this when there have literally been people shot on camera by police officers. And it was like, nobody gave a shit. And it really, really infuriates me. And I was talking with a couple of my friends, they were black friends, and they were saying, yeah, I mean, you know, sort of welcome to our world in terms of interactions with the police are much more likely to turn violent. They're much more likely to be shot by a police officer on duty. They're much more likely to get a higher sentence for the same crime. So from their perspective, it's like, so you guys get mad because a guy got punched and hit his head and was bleeding on a flight. But we've literally seen black people shot on these iPhone camera photo, you know, videos. And people were like, well, we have to support our police. Well, we have to. It seems like there was no question this time about who was in the right. And I just see that as a little hypocritical, that the fact that this was a Asian male versus a black male would make a difference in how outraged people were.
Do you think that if it was a black male that was in the same situation, you think it would have gotten less press? Like, I wonder, I think maybe, not even the fact that he's Asian, but maybe he was a doctor. That was pumped up big time. Like, he's a doctor. I mean, maybe that did give it a little bit more intensity to it.
I think so. And I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm saying that I believe that this response should have been the same response anytime we see an injustice by the police, the people who are supposed to protect and serve us. But what I didn't see this time were the police apologists. every single time there's been a national outrage like this, we have seen these just millions of people that are, we support our blue, you know. Yeah, I support the police too. I mean, I think that they do a very hard job of having to, almost in a discretionary way, pick the laws that are actually enforceable and enforce them. And these are, a lot of these are dumb laws that we're responsible for passing. So I don't blame the police for stupid laws. I blame people for electing, you know, Republicans and Democrats to pass stupid laws. So, but the issue I have here is the police was clearly in the wrong. There was a huge response, but why wasn't this also a huge response from every, and it was almost a national level response. It wasn't like just the Asian doctor community was upset about this. I mean, I've seen people from all sides of the aisle, all sides of the political spectrum, outraged about this. Where was your outrage when Trayvon Martin was shot, Trevor Brown? I mean, where was your outrage?
And obviously a shooting, a loss of life is
yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, why were they more outraged about a guy getting beat by the police? That's what happened. I mean, unquestionably. Why were they more outraged about that than someone actually getting killed by the police when it was later found that that person didn't match the description of who they were looking for, didn't commit a crime, you know, which was just trying to get away from the situation, and they're rewarded with a bullet. And in this situation, this is a guy who, you know, was refusing to give up his seat on the plane, and we punched him in the face, and it was horrible, absolutely. And I loved that people were so outraged by this, because they should have been, and I'm glad that United lost money, and I hope they put their pressure of their contracts, their corporate contracts, on Republic and on Chicago's airport police. Which, there's another thing. I mean, did you know that most airports are owned by the government?
Yep. I didn't.
Yeah.
But now I do.
Like 90 to 95% of them are owned by...
It's public. It's public. It's public private property, which is super weird.
Yeah. And so is there any wonder that airline, you know, when you get past security, that it's so expensive to buy food? Or is there any wonder why it's so expensive to fly now? Because we're dealing with municipal government trying to make a bunch of money off of, I mean.
Well, they're paying for that TSA. You know, those guys have done such a great job. Don't get me started.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And in fact, I would trust private airline security over any airport police or Transportation Security Administration people. I mean, they missed a loaded handgun just like 2 weeks ago. I mean, the guy was fired because he missed a loaded handgun. But, I mean, the point is that they've done studies where they've had FBI agents walk through with weapons and stuff. I mean, undercover. They weren't, like, saying, you know, FBI, you know, walking through. You know, so they missed, like, something like 75% of the weapons and the prohibited items.
I mean, I think to date, they have never caught a single terrorist. And yet, I think several hundred TSA agents have gone to prison for stealing from people.
Yep.
So it's not at all effective.
It's not. It's there so that people feel. And I think this is what maybe drove some of the outrage.
Security theater.
Yeah. People, and George Carlin said this probably the best, that airline security is there to make white people feel safe. That's, I think, a very valid standpoint, because we know objectively that it doesn't serve an actual security purpose. Well, you might say, as George Carlin pointed out, you know, well, they don't bring their bombs because they know that they'll get caught. But they manage to bring all kinds of other horrible shit onto the plane, and they're not getting caught because we've done the studies and we've shown that these people can transport drugs. They can transport. I mean, all the time you read about $20 million of cocaine found in the nose of a plane, you know? I mean, these people are managing to smuggle drugs and other illegal contraband. Not that I'm saying that's bad. I mean, you know, more power to you. I think it's great. But on the other hand, it's like, I mean, they're not serving any useful purpose other than the illusion of security. And I think that's one of the reasons people were so outraged, is because here's a place where they feel absolutely safe, a plane, where nothing can harm them. Everyone's had to be patted down and go through security, even if you're a little 5-year-old boy or girl, by the way, which is absolutely disgusting. I mean, is it any wonder where child molesters are trying to get a job? I mean, seriously. And, I mean, this is something that we've allowed to not only continue, but to get worse. I mean, now we're seeing body cameras, and I have nothing against technology, but, I mean, a technology that allows someone to see me naked when I haven't chosen to allow that, I mean, that's just ridiculous. And then people are like, well, you know, this is why you just don't fly then if you don't like it.
I mean, that's an option if it was a fair market.
Right? Yes.
If it's a fair market, you can say, you know what, I'm going to fly with this company that doesn't do tremendous security because I want an easier boarding and I'm willing to accept the risks.
Yeah.
Or I'm willing to pay for absolutely insane security, but I now have the choice as far as what that looks like and the market can adjust based off of it. You don't really have that choice. It's not real when it's regulated.
And planes cost a stupid amounts of money. I mean, even small planes can cost upwards of $1 million, $2 million. And I mean the small regional level jets, and it, not to mention, you know, McDonnell Douglas or Boeing. I mean, those, some of those planes can be 25 to 50 million per, and they have to, and that's just for one plane. So, I mean, is there any wonder there's no incentive, is what I'm saying, for there to be relaxed security when you're going to lose a 50. I mean, yes, you don't want to lose loss of life, obviously, but even if you think private companies are completely heartless and don't give a shit about people, which some of them don't apparently, but I mean, particularly airlines, but I mean, at least you're going to question if they're going to let themselves lose $50 million plane to some terrorist or some dum-dum with a bomb. So they're not. They're always going to have some level of security because they're going to secure their own asset.
Yeah.
They'll never get insured if they don't have some level of security, but I trust that level of security far more than I trust the government-sponsored TSA that adds $15 to every fucking ticket, hasn't caught a single terrorist once in the nearly 12 years. It's 14, almost four. Gosh, it's been even longer than that, hasn't it?
Been a long time.
Gosh, yeah. It doesn't seem that long ago, yeah. But I guess it was. I mean, and all that time, right? 15 years nearly, they haven't caught a single terrorist with a single bomb.
Yep.
So what are we doing?
And you can look at organizations that have private security forces. Like, well, here in Vegas, we've got these casinos.
Oh yeah,
and
safest place in the world.
If you want a fast response, go to a casino and commit a crime. They'll be on you in minutes. If you've shopped in a mall, almost all those malls have private security because, well, they know their response time is going to be significantly faster than public security. And imagine your experience that you have at like Disneyland. When you go to Disneyland, of course they've got their own security, but their security is incentivized to make sure that the people there have a wonderful experience. And it's not there to, you know, beat somebody up and like drag them out and do the security theater thing. They're incentivized for creating a great environment, and those incentives matter a lot. So if a plane has their own security in place, yeah, they're incentivized to make your experience going through security as great as humanly possible because they want you to fly and buy their ticket again. But if it's your tax dollars that you're forced to pay anyways that's going to go to the security that is going to screen you, there's no incentive for the experience to be good, fast, reliable, anyway, positive. I would prefer the security at Disneyland over the DMV any day.
I think that hits it right on the head.
Yeah. So let's move on to our next topic, and that is the very heavy, heavy topic of Syria and what is taking place there. I'll go over a little bit of the timeline here. So on the 4th, there was a chemical attack. So chemical weapons got out there. There's lots of discussion as far as the origin of that, and I think we'll probably dive a little deeper into that shortly here. On the 5th, the UN Security Council set up an emergency meeting, and on the 6th, the U.S. Sent some cruise missiles, 59 Tomahawk missiles, into that airbase, and so that's kind of the series of events. There's a few things we're going to talk about on that, the legality of it, how this actually matches the platform with the politicians, the cost, was it effective, and then the most important part of this is it a justified response? So I guess let's take those in order because the justified response thing is going to be where it becomes heavy and a bigger conversation. Some things are actually really, really easy to cover. So the legality of it, if you are going to, from what I understand, and I am no political expert here, from what I understand, if you are going to bomb another country, you need to get congressional approval on that. And that, unfortunately, was not done by President Trump. So here is a little video clip that speaks to it just for a second. This is Tim Kaine So this is the Senator Timothy Kaine talking a little bit about the legality of the of our I shouldn't say retaliation, our response, our country's response to this.
What agreement empowered the United States to take military action against Syria? What international law allows the United States, without UN resolution, to unilaterally strike out against a sovereign?
Chris, there is no legal justification for this. I voted to use military action against Syria in August of 2013, but I said the president has to come to Congress. And Donald J. Trump, citizen Trump at that time, said exactly the same thing. A president has to go to Congress. So, and he's got to lay the plan out on the table so that Congress can debate it and vote on it.
So I don't think there's a lot of confusion legally on the legality of it. Not to say that Congress wouldn't have approved him doing this. I'm pretty sure that if he had gone to Congress and asked for approval, they probably would have absolutely said, yep, go for it. Do you agree?
I mean, there was enough Republicans and conservative Democrats. So I think that it would have been easy.
Yeah, I think so too. Now, let's move on to his platform. So Trump ran on, well, there's a lot of statements that any politician makes before getting elected, but he definitely spoke about being against ISIS. He was against Syria conflict. He's obviously fiscally conservative. So a lot of reasons that people say they didn't vote for Hillary was because they were they used the term war hawk, and that they were afraid that she was going to go in and create war and stir things up. And so a lot of people are pointing out that this is really the kind of the opposite action that they were anticipating from Trump. Do you have any statement on that, or do you agree or disagree?
I mean, I think I would disagree slightly. I think that both Hillary and Trump presented themselves as sort of the classic strong, aggressive, decisive action. And I would say that Trump even was more on the, we're going to bomb, you know, the shit out of them, is something that he was fond of saying. Hillary didn't really talk about that, but we all know that under Obama as Secretary of State, she oversaw just an exponential increase of the number of drone bombings and other airstrikes that we committed on foreign soil, also without congressional approval. So I think that the only candidate that was running that would have actually stopped the foreign intervention was Gary Johnson.
I couldn't agree more. I think you're absolutely right. I think there are definitely some conservatives that voted for Trump that are now raising their hands going like, hey, I thought you were absolutely anti-ISIS, and from what I understand, the other side of Syria is serious fighting ISIS, so what are you really doing? And I think it's creating a little bit of confusion within their party right now.
Oh, yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the cost. This is also relatively easy to quantify, but coming from the standpoint of being fiscally conservative as a Republican president stands on, there's 59 Tomahawk missiles. These are budgeted at $1.59 million a piece, the strike costing $93 million. So it's not a cheap move. In fact, just a couple days later, he bombed Afghanistan with the massive ordnance air blast, MOAB, or what they also refer to as the mother of all bombs. And that was a $314 million bomb, singular, one bomb that cost $314 million. So from a financially, fiscally conservative standpoint, these actions were not cheap at all, but maybe they were really effective. And of course, the bad news to report on that was that within hours of this bombing, they were taking planes off of this airfield. So jets were flying within hours of the bombing. So it was definitely a powerful show of force. So I don't want to take that away from the relevance of the United States' response. It was a very, very powerful show of force. But the truth is, it didn't really impact them from using that airfield. Now, and also in fairness, the United States told Russia that they were going to take this action, and Russia being an ally with Syria, there's a lot of people speculate, and I got to think pretty accurately, that Russia told Syria, hey, the United States is going to you know, drop a bunch of ordnance on your airfield, so they probably evacuated it. But it just seems to me that if you're spending $93 million, almost $100 million on an attack, that area probably shouldn't work anymore. It should probably be devastated at that point. Thoughts on the either the effect or the cost or anything like that?
I mean, from my perspective, the cost doesn't bother me, and maybe it's because it's just how much things cost when you're trying to, blow something the shit up. I mean, when you're trying to blow something up, it's going to cost a shit ton of money, I guess is what I'm saying. So I know a lot of people are like, oh, the cost, but we have to remember that, there's a lot of waste in the government's budget, particularly in the military, but actual weapons that we're going to use, I don't see that as a huge, I think there's lots of trillions of dollars, trillions, right? And we're talking about tens of millions, almost 100 million. But compared to the trillions we're spending on defense over the, just the F-35 program alone, what are you really going to...
You're saying the military budget is so massive.
It's so huge.
We're splitting hairs over the fact that $100 million.
The same people who go after welfare recipients when Social Security is a $33 trillion unfunded obligation. And that's if we stopped today and only paid out people who are over 40. So, and my numbers might be slightly off because they're a little old. But the point is that, and I'm telling you, the numbers are only going to be bigger than that. So it's at least, floor $33 trillion unfunded obligation, and people are getting mad over tens of millions on welfare and tens of millions on food stamps and not even a million, I believe, on Planned Parenthood. So I just find it funny that people focus on these teeny tiny little nitnoy millions when we're talking about I know, and it does seem like a lot, but from the government, that's how big the federal government is.
Well, specifically the military budget. It's one thing to say, when you say, well, Planned Parenthood, about $1 million. So this was 100 times the funding of Planned Parenthood. That seems
incredible. And that's just incredible. The federal piece. Yeah.
Yeah, that seems incredible.
It does on to the normal American, and it should. I mean, people should realize that was our $100 million. And I don't know many people who would have spent it on blowing the shit up at us. I mean, some people would have, but yeah. I don't know that the majority of American, I don't believe the majority of Americans thought that this was justified. Now, on the other hand, I'm going to cross swords with the libertarians a little bit here and say,
you know what podcast you're on, right?
I know what podcast I'm on. And so I'm just going to, a little triggered, if you're going to be triggered by this, but... I can't believe I just did that. But, I actually think that in the few small instances of the use of chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons, that an absolute show of force is justified. And again, I realize that is posturing and it's foreign intervention. And I still hold that we should never go to war over there. In fact, I think Ron Paul said it best that the reason it's such a mess over there is because we meddled with them in the first place. We helped create Assad and the monster that he is. And we also helped, in our part, create ISIS because of the other foreign wars that we've been involved in. So I don't think we should get involved in Syria whatsoever. In fact, I think that if anything, we should be pulling out of the Middle East and pulling back. But if anybody across the entire world were to use chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons, I would hope that as an international community, we would come together to recognize the grave threat to humanity that those types of weapons present and to respond accordingly. So imagine if instead of chemical, we elevated it to biological.
Or nuclear. I mean, there's some pretty nasty stuff out there in this world.
Yeah, I mean, imagine... First of all, the reason that these three are an exception in my mind is because they aren't used to target. They're rarely used to target military members. They're used to hit people where it hurts the most: children, women and children, older and younger alike, who are most susceptible to chemical warfare. And that's why, yes, you can use chemical warfare on troops, but often they're going to be the least likely to be affected by it because they're strong,
Vaccinated with gas masks.
Vaccinated with gas masks, yeah. So who does this hit the hardest? Well, as we saw in those heartbreaking videos, it hit children, old people, parents who are just, I mean, how can you watch that video and not feel empathetic of what those people went through? Now, I do understand there's a false flag argument, but I have to believe that until there's evidence that there was a false flag, I'm going to believe that it wasn't. And because I don't have zero faith in the government as a whole. I don't think that majority of the people who work for the government are evil, horrible bureaucrats that can't wait to spend that money and to kill those people. I think that there is a level, maybe not what I would hope it would be, but there is a level of human decency even in the government. And so I choose to believe, until evidence presents itself otherwise, that Assad, the monster that he is, it has already done things that lead me to believe that in his character he would definitely order a chemical weapon to be used. You know, that only the strongest of international responses could be made against the use of this. And it's really as more of a, don't you dare escalate. Don't you dare try it again, because we're watching, the international community is watching, and if you escalate this, because that's the thing, biological warfare, people like to watch Contagion and all these different movies, I don't think they realize just how deadly this stuff is. I mean, it is not very expensive nowadays. In fact, even at high school level, people are starting to take biotechnology classes. It is not that expensive. It's not like nuclear material where we can control the supply of uranium, so we pretty much know who can enrich it into weapons-grade plutonium. This is not the same, right? You can take a common flu virus, one of the most deadly, or really the second most deadly virus in the entire world, weaponize it in such a way that it has a higher mortality rate, and deploy it. And you can deploy it by infecting someone who doesn't even know and sending them into the area. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. So where do we, I mean, this is something that could have affected a lot more people than it did. And I just don't buy into the argument that we should be isolationists, that we should just close our eyes and hope that it doesn't drift across our borders, because someday it will.
I mean, there's definitely sides of this that I agree with you on. I think it's important to have a line in the sand, right? So I don't disagree and say, well, there's definitely certain things, nuclear weapons, there are weapons in this world that are incredibly powerful, and there's probably more to come as our technology develops. And yeah, we should absolutely have a line in the sand now, but I also think it's a little hypocritical for us to have these weapons and then say that nobody else should be able to use them. Not saying we should use them either. It's just that if we're saying the line in the sand is any ordinance above whatever, 2,000 pounds, right? If that's where we stop, then we shouldn't have those either. Nobody should have those, and we should kind of agree to that. A couple of things that that strike me, though, is a few things. One, this wasn't an attack on the U.S. Now, that doesn't mean that it's inappropriate for the U.S. to respond to it, but it's just as appropriate for anybody else to respond to it. And there's always that danger of being the world police, right? And there's movies written about the farce that is the United States world police. Mm-hmm. Additionally, yeah, the false flag arguments, Syria says, hey, we didn't do it. Russia says, well, they did bomb, but they bombed a storage shed that had chemical weapons in it, but the weapons were ISIS's weapons. There's confusion. There's definitely right. Confusion taking place here. Some things that bother me is there's the organization of Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. So, anyways, they confirmed that Assad had destroyed all of his weapons in January 4th of 2015. And on the other hand, his enemies, so ISIS, they have 52 confirmed chemical attacks. So they definitely do have chemical weapons. I'm not saying I know who did what. Sure. I don't, and I'm certainly not smart enough to or have the information to be able to make that claim. My concern is that there is a lot of what ifs and who knows and things like that. There's a lot of questions still on the table, and I worry that we struck very, very fast.
Well, I take a different side of things in saying that that we probably do know, and we do have that information, but it's being kept operationally classified.
But why? Like, why would you keep that classified? It's similar to like...
It protects the people who gather the information, generally speaking. So if you want to put American spies at risk in Syria, then absolutely, yeah, release that information, and then the enemies can gather that, what we've released, and figure out who it was that knew that information. So
this might be the conspiracy theorist in me, and this might be the conspiracy theorist in me, but like,
and I'm not saying you're wrong. Yeah. I'm just saying that until that information is declassified, we will never really know the whole story, but the people who do know were the ones that ordered the attacks.
But we went to war already over saying that certain countries had weapons of mass destruction, later to show that they didn't. Like, there's been some statements made that have definitely been false, mm-hmm. that have led us into war. And I think unless all of that information is really, really well known, and based off of the claims that a lot of different countries are making, I don't feel like that information is known. Now, maybe it is. Maybe they got this on lock, and I'd be happy to say, you know what, I was wrong, because oftentimes I'm wrong.
I mean, look at the UK, right? In this case, they came out in strong support of what we did, but in Iraq, they were some hesitation there. And so now, of course, they're our ally, probably our strongest ally, and they backed us up in Iraq as well. But they were less certain on the WMDs, you know. And they did find, you know, old Soviet-era chemical weapons in Iraq. But those today would hardly be considered weapons of mass destruction the way the agents that were used in Syria were. I mean, those were modern. Those were no cases of 80s Soviet era chemical weapons just sitting around.
Yeah,
and I'm not saying that we should invade and then grab them all and be the police. I'm saying that on this one issue of chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons, we should be the police, because there's a vested interest of American citizens in security and keeping the delicate eco balance or ecosystem balance of the world. We have a vested interest in that too, so that's
we just did something that could easily be construed as an act of war, and we did it against a country that is partnered with countries that have nuclear weapons at their disposal that we're already, there's great tension around. I'm not saying it's not justified. Maybe it really, really is.
True.
I think the stakes are incredibly high, and I also know that like, going to war is like using a broadsword to find a needle in a haystack. It's a massive, massive response. And if we're talking about the deaths I don't want to trivialize 80 people dying. The videos are horrendous. But the collateral damage that takes place from war is worse.
Oh, sure. And I still think that going to war is absolutely wrong. But I'll remind you that we did come through the Cold War without starting a war. I have to trust that the people that are older than me that did live through much of the Cold War era, that served in the military during the Cold War, this is no Cold War. That's been the response I've been hearing is, you think the tensions are high now? Okay, well, let me tell you about the Bay of Pigs. Let me tell you about the Cuba Missile Crisis. Let me tell you about, you know, we were so close to the brink of destruction that it's almost laughable on their end to... And there's even people that served in World War II that can tell you there's a levels of monsters, and you know, that's another thing that really irked me earlier this week was Sean Spicer making any comparison of anybody to Hitler in a real press release.
That was insane.
I mean, there's a reason we all compare everyone to Hitler. It's because he's absolutely the worst offender of human rights. Maybe second to Stalin later, but at that time, I mean, absolutely atrocious. But the point is that, I mean, I think that in this one area, we have to believe that, yes, we do, we have a vested interest over there. I mean, I don't think we should have a vested interest, but the fact is that we helped put Assad in power in the 70s with the CIA. We didn't go to war. We assassinated and helped install our own person we thought we could control. And now that he's no longer seeing eye to eye with us, we're gonna bomb him. I mean, this is why meddling in the Middle East is a problem. That's because there's no real ally over there. And even our one ally, Saudi Arabia, is like horrible on human rights. I mean, they regularly kill gay people today.
What was the country that just banned gay people? I thought there was just something I just read about that.
It wasn't banned. I think you're thinking of Chechnya.
I think I am.
And Chechnya, it is so... I mean, there's no technical laws, I believe, but the government's response was, don't worry about gay concentration camps because...
That's what it was.
Yeah, don't worry about those because the government's not even the ones putting them there. It's the families. There is such rampant homophobia by people there that it breaks family bonds, and people will gleefully send those suspected of homosexuality to these concentration camps, government not required. And this is another way that I think some of my anarchist and volunteerist friends make good points about how if government is just a rule and mob majority, then it is no safer than a king, right? 3,000 tyrants is not better than one tyrant. And so, you know, that's why the Libertarian Party's main response is that the smallest minority is the individual. And if we can't protect the individual against the rights or the rule of the majority, then nobody has any rights.
I think that's beautifully put. They can't
be voted away. So, Again, just like United Airlines, the Syria thing, the main thing I want to emphasize is that our hearts break for the people of Syria who we're too stubborn and too afraid of our own, you know, shadow to allow them into this country, to open our borders and our hearts and let them in, who just want to escape from a reality of chemical weapons being used. I mean,
and that's certainly anybody, an area we can both agree on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so end of the day, right? I mean, I hope that all libertarians can realize that when we say open borders, this is why. These people aren't trying to escape from, you know, they're trying to escape from Mexico because of the local drug gangs and the power they have there. They're trying to escape from Syria because of the use of chemical weapons and the fact that we're bombing the Middle East regularly and killing civilians.
It's a bad place to be. No matter, doesn't matter what vantage point you're standing at, it's pretty bad. You don't want to be on the ground floor there.
So it's just ridiculous. How selfish, I think. When we have when you can fit everybody with something like 20 acres in Alaska and not even fill up all of Alaska, every human in the United States could have 20 acres in Alaska and not even fill up Alaska, the whole rest of the fucking country would be empty.
Sign me up.
So
I'd love 20 acres.
Yeah, really. So that's what I mean, though, is that we're not running out of room. Anybody that drives through Nevada knows we're not running out of room.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that whole argument is just... It's just laced with selfishness and greed.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Well, speaking of Nevada, let's go into and talk a little bit about some of the events we have coming up here. If you are up in Carson City, the third Monday Social is coming up here in just a few days on April 17th. They're going to be meeting at La Posada. La Posada Real in Carson City. So it's going to be at 6 o'clock. So head up there. If you are in the neighborhood, we'd love to have you. In Las Vegas, right here, coming up on the 18th is the third Tuesday Libertarian Social at, Siena Italian. Where is that located at again?
It's on, Sahara and Fort Apache.
Wonderful. That's going to be at 5:30. And then if you are in the, Reno Sparks area, they've got their third Tuesday social, and that's going on at Coach's Grill on the 18th at 6:30. And now, lastly, we're going to have one more podcast before this day of, occurs. However, it's going to be the day after. So I just want to give you a heads up. On April 22nd, we're going to be having our day of action. So we would love to see you there. It's going to be starting at 9:30 a.m. For more information on that, head to lpnevada.org. Where can our people find you?
People can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/alexmd.liberty.
Wonderful. If you want to track me down, you can find me on my website, tyusfrance.com, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at tyusfrance, or you can email me or the podcast. You can just email podcast@lpnevada.org. Now, of course, if you want to reach out to us, you can email us there, but we would love you to visit the site to see how you can get involved with our local events, or if you want to run for office, any of those things, head to our website. We've got a lot of information there and a lot of opportunities. Please share the podcast with those around you that are like-minded or those who aren't like-minded. We need them too. And leave us a positive review on iTunes if you get a chance. This is going to be the first episode we're going to post up onto iTunes, and more, many, many more to come. Until next time, make it all about freedom.
This show is brought to you by the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Music is provided by T. Sims. Please support the show by subscribing, sharing it with friends, and leaving a positive review on iTunes. For more information or to learn how to get involved, visit lpnevada.org. Thank you for listening.